Big show for you here today. We wrap up our prospect deep dive talking tight ends with Nate Tice. And that is not all we're doing. We're going to talk offensive linemen at the end of the show because, listen, you don't draft offensive linemen in fantasy, but they create those ecosystems for the fantasy players to thrive. Okay, tight end prospect preview, though. Yeah, we do a deep dive on Kenyon Sadiq. He's a tight end one. We got to talk a lot about him. We do talk a lot about him. Eli Stowers, can he actually be a big slot receiver, or is that just a cute headline? And who is the tight end three that you guys should be talking about more? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is a man who loves to talk. In fact, we just talked for 2 hours a couple of days ago about wide receivers. We're not talking about wide receivers today. We are talking about different pass catchers and some guys who block as well. It is our very own, our good friend, Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. I do like to talk. Luckily, I stumbled into this job that, yeah. So my wife gets saved a little bit for my rants, but you guys are the, I don't know to say the beneficiaries of it, but the recipients of some of my rants and astray thoughts. We'll put it that way, as we got to do with a 2-hour receiver pod yesterday. Good to see you, Matt, though.
Good to see you too. Yeah. Not only did I do the 2 hours with you, then I did immediately, like, not truly minutes later, jumped on to do an hour with Boone, shot a 45-minute segment for my YouTube channel, did a guest spot. My wife's talking to me during dinner. She's like, you haven't responded to a thing I've said in the last 2 minutes. I'm like, I'm talked out, all right? I got nothing left. I've spoken all day. My job is talking, and I'm going to be a good listener. I'm listening to what you're saying. I just don't.
2 years
just
in one mouth.
That's right.
For a reason.
I'm practicing. Practicing proactive listening. But we are going to be doing a lot of talking here today because we have to do a deep dive on these tight ends. These are it's our final positional preview segment here, positional deep dive. We're going to go deep on the tight ends. We're going to talk about it. What's a very interesting class, Nate, but we're also going to be doing a deep dive into the offensive line prospects as well. Some of the guys who might be doing, you might be coming off the board in the first round here. We've got 7 guys to talk about there. I know you and your dad, speaking of 2 hours, I believe you and your dad the week before, Mike Tice, the former head coach, Mike Tice, offensive line expert, did a 2-hour pod on Football 301 on these guys. So I know we've got a lot to dive into here today. That is for sure.
Yeah, we do. Especially with this draft class, that's where the kind of positions are, actually. You know, it's not a great running back class, not a great quarterback class. You know, there's a couple guys at the top, you know, maybe a day two guy. But then tight ends, pretty deep. O-line, pretty deep and top heavy, no pun intended. And I really do think that I think there's going to be more offensive linemen going early than I think even people. There's people have inklings with this. I think the over-under gambling-wise is at 8.5. And I would easily put, I think it was actually 7.5 when I last looked at it, but I'd easily put that at the over. We might get 9. And even talking to Dane Brugler from The Athletic, who's, you know, the best of the best, he was like, might be 10. So there's going to be a lot of linemen going, but the tight end class is pretty cool. There's Kenyon Sadiq up top, a really cool day two and even early day three guys as well.
It does feel like, just to put a bow on that offensive line thought, and again, we'll come back to this later, but it feels like I think Dane might have been the first one I saw say it, and I know Josh Norris from Underdog also echoed kind of the same thoughts, that it feels like the league is starting to come around to, like, well, we don't really love this draft class, so we're actually just kind of hoping to hit doubles in the first round this year. We might not get home runs, so we're just looking to hit doubles, looking to get on base, and offensive line and receiver is how you do that, because, like, you need 5 offensive linemen, you probably need 3 to 4 wide receivers. Like, you're at least going to get somebody who's going to help you a little bit, if not just maybe be a star player. We'll see about that. So that does seem to be the theme of this draft class. I don't know if you're kind of hearing the same sort of thing.
Yeah, and this draft class has a lot. It's weird. It's not top heavy, but there is depth at some of these positions, and it's not the sexiest guys. There's a lot of guys with blemishes or just, like, I wouldn't say tweeners, but very maybe specific, actually, kind of players, you know, especially defensively. Like, there's a lot of, like, designated pass rushers, or there's edge prospects that are really good against the run or middling against pass rushers, or they tested really well, don't have production, or they're old. Like there's just red flag, or just blemish. But having said that, there is still a lot of good and there's still a lot of solid. It's really just the muck of day two is actually kind of the positive of it as well. Like where you can find a lot of quality in round three, and I'd even say round four. Mm-hmm. The problem is you might start dipping into that pile earlier than you usually would in the draft. You know, there's not a lot of those kind of upper middle guys or upper echelon guys. So it's slim pickings, but that doesn't mean there's a lack of quality. So I like how they put it. It was that the getting on base in this draft class, and you could see even people angling for more of those day two-ish picks as opposed to maybe getting way up there. But that's what this class is. That's what it's been fun parsing through it. There's no consensus in this class, something you and I have reiterated 500 million times. Others are saying it the same way, but that doesn't mean there's a lack of quality. It's just, I think it's going to be circumstances and situations are going to matter a lot. And I think the ranges of these guys is going to be very wide, which I think is going to, it's going to be a very entertaining draft shows that we're going to do because there's going to be surprises and there's going to be falls, like, or perceived surprises and perceived falls. But that's what I think is going to be really fun about it.
That's what I think people can get excited about, that even if, okay, well, maybe the talent, we'll see how it ends up working out. These guys will be, you know, whatever they'll be as pros. The good part is that when we're on our live draft shows Thursday and Friday night next week, we're going to get a lot of varying opinion. You know, all those varying opinions are going to create some chaos. So yeah exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll ever match my octave that I hit for the Michael Penix pick. Which was the year before you. I'm sure you guys did the same thing when you were with The Athletic, but that was an all-timer for me, was the Michael Penix surprise at 8. Maybe I'll hit that octave a couple times, but probably not. So let's actually talk about what we're here to talk about today, which is tight ends, offensive linemen. And let's start with the tight ends. Before we dive into Kenyon Sadiq, Eli Stowers, and the specific guys, kind of give us your opinion on what this class looks like as a whole, you know, relative to like other classes, the whole deal.
Actually, a lot of valid Y inline tight ends and not just the Jackson Haas types, which is truly just inline. Okay, might get a catch every few weeks, you know, kind of guy. Truly Y tight ends that have upside as receivers that can be that top three receiver or pass catcher on a team, you know, along with a couple of receivers. Not to say that there's maybe that high end combination, but that's actually really cool that there's not only just one. I can name, we're going to talk about a few of them today. There's three or four I like pretty like later round two or day two, I should say. There's some interesting day three guys. There's some receiving only tight ends with great athleticism and production, which is kind of rare in college tight ends to actually have some like real production as a receiver. And I think that's just kind of fun is that sometimes with these draft classes, especially the Y inline tight end guys, there's like one, you know, like one guy that can actually do it, that actually has tape of him doing it. Maybe a guy I can project, you know, like a Colson Loveland that like had enough that I projected that I could do that. He was, of course, a freak athlete as well. But it's one, it's kind of nice that there's some interesting candidates that I really do think will outkick their draft position. Like they will, and I can actually even say that now. A lot of tight ends do. But I do think that there's going to be some guys that go round three, even round four. Then a few years from now, we're like, wow, look at that steal of that team. And I think there's a couple of those guys. There's just a lot of depth. And I snuck in. I just filed my last big board, or really kind of my last official one, top 75. I'll do a top 100 next week with no blurbs because I'm blurbed out. But it's I snuck in two of these guys, more of these guys on top of Sadiq into the top 50. I'll be a little higher on those guys, maybe a couple other people. But then I could have rattled off three or four that I could have included on my top 100. So there's a lot of depth in that day two, late day two to early day three. And again, that you don't really get that a lot. Like we have recently, but that's kind of cool to see just the different types, the different flavors that are valid as opposed to just ideas of stuff.
I love it. All right. Well, let's start talking about some of those specific guys here. And let's start with first round, consensus first round tight end, consensus tight end one, Kenyon Sadiq out of Oregon. You know, you were actually talking about him on this show before the end of the college football season, like during the college football playoffs, and we're doing like a little early preview. And I think some of the YouTube commenters did not like, or some of the YouTube chatters didn't love your Sadiq analysis. And I actually kind of have found him being a little bit there are some differing opinions on Sadiq, and I think probably a lot of that has to be because he's 6'3", 241 pounds. He's not your traditional size tight end, but what we saw at the NFL Scouting Combine is that he is, without question, a freak show. You're seeing the numbers on the screen here. 4.39 in the 40, 43.5 vertical, 11-1 broad jump, 26 reps on the bench press. So clearly, he's an athlete. He's a freak. He looks jacked. He looks rocked up, the whole deal. How does he look as a football player, Nate, when you watch it?
Yeah. You know, before this season, they had Terrence Ferguson on this team, too, who's now with the Rams, second-round pick last year. And Sadiq was used as kind of like a shot play guy. Like, they would run the, like, the long play actions and get him down the field. So you didn't get to see that high usage where it's like, oh, how do you look on a flat getting upfield? How do you look on this getting upfield? It was just spots, one or two catches, maybe a game. Now that he got kind of more highlighted this year, I wouldn't say fully highlighted because of what Oregon's offense was. Sadiq is, you see the testing and he plays like that. You see the explosiveness, you see the speed, you see really game-changing speed. Really, it's hard to keep up with him in the flat or when he's running a crosser or even downfield. And I think he improved a bunch this year. I always bring up this game, but the Rutgers game, Oregon and Rutgers, both Big Ten schools, they played each other. And there's Sadiq running down the seam and up the sideline and getting vertical and getting high pointing the football, which is something I would like to see. I would say if that would be my first blemish with him. He's not the most natural pass catcher. He doesn't have rock hands,
yeah,
but he can fight it a little bit. And I that's the one thing. He's muscular and he kind of feels muscular when he's catching the football. You know, it's like he's like, you know, he's like trying to grab it. And I would say that's my biggest blemish with him on top of, you know, not having ideal size. And that's why he's 19 on my last big board. Hey, I don't have him as high as I had Loveland. I don't have him as high as I had Bowers. I have him maybe a half tick below Tyler Warren last year. These are just the recent top names. But that's not to say that, like, oh, yeah, he's just awful, like anything like that. He's explosive. He's also very physical. He's a willing blocker. He's not going to be able to hold up in line as, like, setting the edge. Like, again, Loveland, I do think that, like, he easily was able to do that. It's that Sadiq, though, can be a good movement blocker, could do enough as a wing player blocker. And again, that's not going to be his calling card in the NFL. It's just nice to have that aspect because that means he can stay on the field. And I really have kind of, yeah, again, not the most natural catcher of the football, just explosive, developing route trios is maybe is how I put it. And I would say that my kind of final one-liner on him is he's on the Vernon Davis, Tommy Tremble spectrum. He's somewhere in between those two. And it's not as big as Davis, but he's just as fast and explosive. And Davis, if anyone remembers him from the 49ers, fought the football a lot. He was also a guy that never really had those natural hands. And Tommy Tremble, a player I actually kind of like as like a role player, that I would say Sadiq is kind of like a plus version of him when he came out of Notre Dame. He's with the Panthers now. And I actually still like Tremble. But I do think that Sadiq is on that spectrum as opposed to a Kyle Pitts or a Loveland or these long tight ends that can maybe project in line.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense to me. And again, just to revisit the testing data, 40-yard dash, vertical jump, broad jump, 98th, 99th, 98th percentile, according to Mock Draftable among tight ends. Like, yeah, he is a complete freak show. Obviously, I think he's a really, really appealing player to watch block in the open field. The question is just obviously 241 pounds. Is he going to be an inline player? Obviously, we're showing the charts on the screen here right now. We are doing tight end charting at Reception Perception. I'm not doing the Max Scano is doing the charting profiles for us. And he's brought this up where some of the concerns with Sadiq are, again, the 241 pounds. Can he be an inline player? And just the route running, obviously, nuance of him is not quite there yet. But that's not really what you want. Like, you want to get him on some of the designer stuff. Like you mentioned, the crossers, leak him out of the backfield, leak him into the flat, and then let the athleticism do the work. That's why the positions are different. Like tight ends, wide receivers are just very, very different when it comes to the actual routes and things of that nature. I guess the question from a fantasy standpoint, Nate, and that's I'm gonna come back to this with all of these guys, is we're all sort of kind of just worried about the Dalton Kincaid of it all, right? Like a guy who is obviously a gifted pass catcher and a useful receiver. But can he be on the field? Is he valid? Does he have to be taken off in this package or that package or the whole deal there? Can he survive as a blocker? And I'm just wondering for you with Sadiq, like, Do you have any of those Dalton Kincaid worries? Like, is he somebody that can be on the field more than a guy like that? Or just sort of where do you fall on that variety of it?
No, that is why I could only get so high with him. And I was pretty high on Sadiq into the season. And that's why I've kind of kept him a half tier below, because of some of that worries where he has to be more of a particular player or specific player. I don't envision him ever being the Trey McBride, feed him 12 targets every single game. Like, McBride was so much more of a fluid route runner. McBride had that kind of tight body control. While I think actually Kincaid's usage is actually kind of like, that's kind of how I see maybe Sadiq getting used. Sadiq is a much better blocker than Kincaid, much more physical. And I do think Kincaid had a little bit more of that kind of maybe, you know, he hit some short area quickness. I actually think those little 5-yard out routes are his like best little thing. But now he's getting used on wheel routes all the time. That's exactly how I'd use Sadiq. So that usage is probably more how Sadiq's usage will be in the NFL. So I'm actually really glad you brought up Dalton Kincaid, because that's kind of how I envision. Like, he's not as fluid as crafty as a route runner as Sam Laporta, who is a good athlete too. He's more physical than Laporta, but he's not that underneath route runner that Laporta was. So I'm just even just trying to think successful. He's not as physical or as big as Tucker Kraft. No other guys that have kind of come out this last year, and that Kraft is kind of his own beast as well. So it's kind of, he is more specific for this. And I actually think Kincaid, maybe a more physical Kincaid, is maybe the best kind of usage, maybe translation for how Sadiq will be. So that's what's hard to weigh, because I have a lot of picks in Dynasty where Sadiq is going to be right in that range. Like, that's where exactly where I'll be looking at taking them. You know, pick 6, pick 8, pick 9, you know, in the first round. But I'm also like kind of hesitant. I'm kind of, once we talk about some of these other guys, you'll see why. Because it's like, I like Sadiq a lot. He's 19 on my big board. It's just fantasy and that high-end usage. I don't maybe envision that unless there's a perfect path for him, which sounds like I'm knocking him, but I'm not. I'm just, it's kind of like, it's hard with him, because it's like, there's not a lot of guys I can picture envision that played like this, that became that 900,000 yard receiver. I mentioned Vernon Davis as one. Vernon always kind of had a limit to his production. And just sometimes how his stuff was. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought up Kincaid, though. I actually think that's a pretty apt one, as maybe even best case as far as production-wise.
Right. I just think he can be on the field more than Kincaid, because he is
agreed,
like a useful movement blocker. That's the problem with Kincaid. It's not that Kincaid's bad. He's just not on the field enough. Like, from a fantasy standpoint, that's the big issue.
Designated hitter.
Sadiq, exactly. It's like,
I mean, get in, run a shot play, get off the field.
Exactly. The yards per route run is really good for Dalton Kincaid, but the actual snap rate is not so much. So, I just think that for a guy like Sadiq, it's going to come down to landing spot for a team that can get the best out of him from a real life standpoint. I think we talked about this on a segment recently where I really like the idea of him being with the Ravens at 14, because he can be used on some of those, like, slice him across the formation, like true movement blocks that this, I imagine they're going to run a pretty kind of copy paste carbon version of what they did in Chicago, like what Ben Johnson wants to do with Declan Doyle as the OC there. And even, like, I agree with you, he's not quite the same as Sam Laporta, but like physical dimension wise, they are, you know, pretty samey. Yeah. And Ben Johnson early on in Sam Laporta's career did a lot to like kind of mask some of the inline blocking deficiencies of a guy like Sam Laporta and get him on the move and everything like that. So I don't know, from a production standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint, if you'd be really gassed up for his early career outlook, if he's splitting with Mark Andrews, and obviously the Ravens are always going to be run heavy with Lamar Jackson. But I do think I'd like to see him land with a spot that's going to help him in a real life standpoint, because I think ultimately that will keep him growing and developing. And maybe by year 3, year 4, he's really much more of a featured piece.
And I think so too. There has to be something said with how willing he is to be physical. Like, that, there is a mindset, there's competitiveness to him. His coaches loved him. Like, there's a lot, he is physically maxed out. Like, if you ever look at him, like, just look at his shoulders. Like, it looks like he's just, I mean, his, like, it's, but he's not the longest guy. So that's why the Laporta Kincaid stuff's interesting to even talk about. That's like, his usage was going to be, he's going to be a better at times real football player than maybe sometimes his production, where I think his production will always end up being boom busty. He'll have some games where, because he's got that yak ability, where you have a 3-catch, 90-yard touchdown performance, and the next week it's no catches, 1 target. You know, it's like, I think that's how I envision him anyways. But I think the Ravens are a great landing spot. The Chiefs might be a little rich, but I would understand even there at pick 9. But I do think the mid-teens to the mid-20s is going to be end up his landing spot, and that's where I'm kind of comfortable with where he ends up to.
All right, good breakdown on Sadiq. We had to go deep on him because he's the consensus tight end one. Let's get to the next guy here, Eli Stowers out of Vanderbilt. I'm going to throw it to you this way, Nate. We've seen like the talking point is kind of leaked out, like, oh, some teams view Eli Stowers, who's 6'4", 239 pounds, runs a 4.51. Actually, they don't even view him as a tight end. They view him as a big slot. Okay. I know that gets people excited, but we just mentioned the name Kincaid, and my problem with this is, like, that gets people excited. Okay, are you actually a big slot receiver, or are you ultimately a tight end who's playing in the slot and you're the biggest, slowest slot receiver in the league? Which is what, like, the Dalton Kincaid problem is, like, well, Khalil Shakir is a better slot receiver than Dalton Kincaid every day of the week, and that's why he plays more than Kincaid does. So I'm just kind of throwing that out there with the Eli Stowers thing, not to be negative, but just like, what do you think about that? And do you share that view? And is he more just like better served be, hey, I know you're 6 foot, 239 pounds, but I mean, like, I know what Rap Sheet's doing here with the tweet we're showing, like, oh, his build compares to Mike Evans. No, it doesn't. Okay. Let's live in reality here. How do you actually think Eli Stowers projects to the league?
I wanted to hate him, and I ended up really liking him, and it shocked me.
Okay.
It shocked me because this is, oh, I'm so glad we're showing that kid from The Simpsons, because that was his performance at the combine. He's a former quarterback. You can see he's a natural catcher of the football. He's a natural athlete on top of what he tested like, but he plays like that too. It's not just like, oh, he tests like that, and then you watch him on film. It's like, oh, where's that speed? Where's that juice? I called him a Tino, tight end in name only. And he and this other guy we'll talk about a little later. So Stowers and this other guy, I have right next to each other on my big board. They're both in my top 50. They're tight end 2, tight end 3. They're just a little different flavors. And I still don't know which one I prefer. It just depends on team. But he really is a mismatch problem. He really is a freak athlete. He really can create yards after the catch. If Mike Gesicki goes in the second round, Stowers is better than Mike Gesicki, like when they were coming out, and more physical, even though Stowers is not a good blocker. Like, he's not. Like, and which is that is going to be maybe a work in progress. There's some want to. Like, he's actually like not like, oh, I'm shying away. Like, Gesicki wanted nothing of that. Still doesn't. While I think Stowers is just I think I put my hands here. I got in the way. But it's not like a lack of physicalness. It's just more like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I even wrote, most tight ends take times, and Stowers might be 2 years away from being 2 years away. But he's the guy, at times, he looks like he has no idea what he's doing. But oh my God, what an incredibly fun athlete with the highest of high-end tools to work with. And he snatches the football. He's a great route runner. He's got a great feel for space. The power slot kind of conversion for him, got to see how he can block in space, whatever, yada, yada. But he can beat DBs, like, because he's that big and that athletic and that fluid of an athlete. It's not just testing. It's real athleticism. But, man, it's – I I wanted to hate him, and I end up really liking him. And this is the type of tight end I usually shy away from, or usually just go, yeah, you guys have him high, but watch, wait until – Kincaid actually was an example of that. Just wait till he gets to the NFL, and we'll see what actually happens. Stowers has got some real juice. Like, that testing backs up how he moves. So it's, again, a guy that at first I was like, yeah, whatever, he's a specific role guy. I actually do think if you can live in 12 personnel and he's your – kind of how Kelsey was used early on, where it's like, yeah, they're in 12, but he's essentially another receiver for you. Like, I do think that he can do that enough because he's that good of an athlete and that good of a mover. So again, I'm surprised these words are coming out of my mouth. He ended up in the top 50 for me. And I do think he is, like, he's interesting. I'm very excited to see who ends up with him. Cause there's certain, like, if he goes to the Dolphins, I'm like, oh, it was nice knowing you, Eli. But if he goes to, he goes to some of these other teams, like, I could be way. I mean, I say the Packers and Luke Musgrave didn't work out for you. All right, let's get this guy in here with the pair with Tucker Kraft. If you have a Y and a legit Y, oh my God, like, Stowers could be a really cool player for you. So, yeah, again, long winded way to say, like, yeah, he actually, it backs up that athleticism and it's got some real football to him. It's just that, yeah, he's not going to be a good blocker.
I actually think you bringing up Mike Gesicki was a really good point here, because I think Mike Gesicki doesn't have like some of the natural receiving ability, like necessarily to be like this type of player. But he has had real moments of like, especially with the Bengals now, I think he's been used in the best possible ways. Like he's essentially just like, all right, T. Higgins got hurt. Like he's our replacement for T. Higgins as a big slot receiver for us. They don't even really ask him to play real deal tight end. He's essentially a receiver. All those years when people wanted me to chart tight ends, I'm like, you guys want me to chart Kyle Pitts? You know, you really should be asking me to chart is actually Mike Gesicki, but you know, whatever. So he's really this is a big receiver. And the difference between him and Kincaid, and why, like the thing I said with Kincaid, is like, okay, well, you're just the biggest, slowest slot receiver in the league. We actually never got any testing data on Dalton Kincaid.
Right. Said injuries.
Which is like, because he had injuries, and you know, it's one of those things where you can hand wave that before the draft. Like I definitely said that about Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm like, I don't need to know what Marvin Harrison Jr.'s 40 time is. I'm kind of curious what his 40 time would be. I kind of wish I knew.
Wish I had that data point now.
Remember when Corey Davis went fifth overall in the NFL draft and people were like, oh, it doesn't matter, we never got any pre-draft testing. Like, I kind of wish I knew what a Western Michigan receiver's 40 time actually was if I was going to take him fifth overall in the NFL draft. Mike Gesicki, on the other hand, I mean, the mock draftable spider chart on him, it's everywhere. 92nd percentile 40-yard dash, 90th percentile vertical jump, 97th percentile broad jump, 98th percentile three-cone drill. And Eli Stower is definitely much more that level of freak show. So I do think, even just beyond what's on film, that alone is a little bit more encouraging, I think, than the Kincaid profile.
I'm perfectly honest. I'm glad we're talking about Kincaid a lot. I have kind of just my personal notes on this. I had Stowers graded higher than I had Kincaid, because he has more size, he's younger, doesn't have the injury history. I think he's a more natural of a mover, longer. But I had him kind of in the same how I do grades. But I preferred Stowers. And again, did not go into this process thinking this, because I understand what Stowers was when I watched him during the season, saw a lot of Vanderbilt, and then watching him on film. Again, it's really good things happen when he gets the ball. Like there's flat routes that he's turning a 2-yard flat route into a 14-yard gain, because he's getting the edge and getting north before any SEC defense can react and get there. He's running corner routes, high pointing the football as he's getting hit and then twirling and getting his feet in bounds. It's again, I have to reiterate this. The testing backs up what he is on film. Like, he is a freak. And that's sometimes with tight ends. That's the thing, is just draft the biggest, longest, fastest athletes and hope they figure it out. Like, Stowers has got some real something to him, even if he never ends up anything more than an average blocker at best. I still think that his athleticism is worth investing in somewhere on day two.
Yeah, I like it. That's kind of where he's, again, consensus ranked board right now. You've got Kenyon Sadiq is 17th overall on the consensus board, and then Eli Stowers is 51st. So I think that's kind of where we'd expect him to go, somewhere on day two. And it will definitely take the right team, and he will be a very fun player to talk about post-draft. Like, did he land with a coaching staff where we think he can pull off the true, more of the Mike Gesicki big slot player and everything? And
yeah,
I do want to, before we throw to break, and I'm going to throw to break here because there's kind of like a drop off to then the next tier of guys, at least consensus board wise, like it's 17-51 for Eli Stowers and Kenyon Sadiq the other way around. And then we get to the 70s for the next group of guys there. So a little bit of a drop off. I just want to apologize to Dalton Kincaid real quick. He took a lot of shots in the first two episodes.
I like him better. He's better than that. It's like, I like Kincaid coming out. It was just more, you know, like some of my worries came to fruition.
He is a useful player for the Buffalo Bills. Yep. It's just, I said this at the time, that I thought Brandon Bean was galaxy braining the build there. Where it's like, what if I got I didn't get JD McKissick. You know, I need a pass catching running back. Yeah. I need a tight end who's basically a receiver. It's like, why don't you just get a receiver? And you know, all these years later, they're still haunted by that receiver position. So
sometimes tight end actually does the tight end stuff, as opposed to the guy that's just like your other tight end, Dawson Knox, that you already have on the roster.
And again, good player, but he's definitely been like a test case from a fantasy perspective. Like, the idea is, you actually don't want a tight end that blocks at all. You want the guy who's going to run routes. You want the guy who's a receiver. And that is true, but you got to be valid to be on the football field to get the, like, a more more complement of those routes, a higher percentage of those routes, and not be like a 50 to 60% snap player. So a lot to learn from the Kincaid thing, but I do wanted to apologize to Dalton Kincaid because we did just bag on him a lot, and I kind of end up doing this a lot whenever we talk about tight ends, because this is just it's a thing I think about often. But anyways, with that, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk through some more tight ends in the 2026 NFL draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing our preview of the tight ends from this year's draft class. Let's get to the next guy here. This is Max Clair out of Ohio State is our next one up here. So tell us what we need to know about Max Clair, 6'4", 246, out of Ohio State.
One of two Ohio State tight ends, too. Max Clair, very, very smooth athlete. That's how and what's hard with Ohio State tight ends is they're offense is so receiver centric. I get it, but it's very receiver centric, so you don't really see the production or the usage sometimes you want to see for a guy probably going to take on day two. Actually, we see this tweet right now, transfer from Purdue. I have him in my, so I do a top 75 and then I add 10 names, next 10 names. He was in my next 10 names list, so top 80 ish player, third round grade. Smooth athlete, can create a little bit with the ball in his hands. Not a great blocker, but moves well in space and very aware. Kind of knows what he is and knows his assignment. But to me, projects more as a true off tight end or second tight end type, or a third down tight end. You know, if you're an 11 personnel, that's just a traditional labeling. But more fluid than fast, good balance, can adjust for throws, even though he doesn't have great length. Actually has some Kincaid to him.
I just issued the public apology. Now we got to do it again.
I mean that in a more complimentary sense than this, in this instance, as opposed to what we're just bashing. Oh my goodness. But no, he, again, just has, he does a little bit of everything in this offense. Like he'd move in the slot. They'd have him in the wing. They sometimes have him in line, even though I don't think he's fantastic about it. But man, he's just a good athlete, has enough route running ability, can use a little bit more. But it, you know, I do think there's toughness to his game, even if it doesn't show up blocking wise. It's more maybe at the catch point. But man, I liked him. I just, there's other guys and their skill sets that, if you just hear me describe Eli, there's two Eli, so I always mess up. Eli Stowers is that he's, if you're going to be an F tight end, AKA a receiving tight end, then be a freak athlete, freak. While Clair, I think, is a good, very good athlete and smooth, but then he's also a limited blocker. So for me, I'd prefer to bet on the guy that's freaky as opposed to good to very good. But I really like Clair. Like, I do think a proper home for him where that has a true Y already. Not like the Packers, but maybe I'm trying to think now, just go through. Shoot, maybe even like the Bears. I don't think they would go with tight end, but like to compliment Colson Loveland, that would be a nice fit right there. The Steelers, if they want to add more juice to their tight end room, you know, something like that. The Eagles could use a guy like this. I know they maybe need more inline guy, but to get, once Dallas Goedert finally moves on after next year, there's a lot of rosters that could use a guy. Actually, the Ravens, you just mentioned them. Sadiq's been popular with them in the first round, but if they wanted to wait, Clair would actually fit some of how likely he was used. Where I like him, but I maybe don't see as high, I don't, maybe not as bullish or high-end bullish as maybe some of the other receiving tight ends. And I like maybe some of the guys that have more blocking chops a little bit better. But having said that, clear third round grade. I think he easily goes day two. Very well liked, just don't fully loved him. I think maybe as my assessment of Clair.
That makes sense. And like he kind of almost the way you're describing him, it strikes a little bit like a Pat Freiermuth type where he's just not special as a receiver, but probably not big enough to be like an inline guy. But like Pat Freiermuth has obviously had some really nice moments. Arthur Smith and Aaron Rodgers wanted nothing to do with him last year. But like he has had some nice moments in more of like the Matt Canada spread out world that the offense has had.
He's the only guy Steelers fans ask me about. What do you think of Freiermuth? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like he's been there for forever. I think we all know what Freiermuth is by this point. It's like, can we talk about Zach Frazier, your center?
Right. He's like the not special as a receiver. But like can't, it's like not an inline guy, so he does like leave you to the in the tweener-ish world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And like, by the, again, like I said, Pat Freiermuth has had some really nice moments. And generally, like you said, we know who he is as a nice, nice career. Probably it's only just going to smoke the Bengals when you play the Bengals because they can't cover tight ends. So it's nice that you play him twice in division and you're able to stack those stats up there. But yeah, interesting player is Max Starr. I do one real quick thing. We had the tweet earlier, and you were going to say this about the Purdue. Like, you got to kind of watch him at Purdue a little bit to get a glimpse of what he was, but not Ohio State. Interesting that that's like the second prospect I've heard this about, because I only watched and charted Deion Burks at Oklahoma. But because I have such a weird outlier, like, I really like him. And I told this to you, I told you this yesterday, that JJ Zacharyson, who does great data work, almost laughed me off his show for bringing up Deion Burks, because his production is just so gross. But I was like, you know, I kind of like Deion Burks a little bit. So I was like seeing what other people think. And Steve Smith did a whole breakdown on his YouTube channel about why you really got to watch the Purdue film for Deion Burks to really get the sense of who he is. So it's interesting that these guys are like leaving Purdue for these bigger programs, and then they're arriving there and be like, I didn't get what I was hoping for here.
And I can name two more guys that left Purdue and it was the same way. Nick Scorton, who got drafted by the Panthers last year.
Oh yeah, we talked about that last year. Right.
Purdue film way better than the AM film, and now Panthers version of him looks more like the Purdue film. And then Dylan Tiedemann, the Oregon safety, also a Purdue transfer as well. So you got to see him get used a little bit differently, and actually probably more how he'll get used in the NFL as like a quarter safety as opposed to kind of like this rover type. So yeah, I know, it's like, man, Purdue was racking them up and winning not a lot of games with all that talent.
Yeah, that's right. And then what's going on at Purdue? We need a deep dive. Well,
That's like Stowers coming from New Mexico State, right? Because he was a quarterback, I think, at A&M, and then transfers to New Mexico State. New Mexico State had like four or five guys in this class that are going to get drafted. The New Mexico State Aggies had like four or five, not including Diego Pavia, the quarterback from Vandy, who's undraftable. But you know, they had some like real talent with the Aggies.
Producer Colin, put a pin in this. We'll tell the YouTube team here's our next big pitch for the video essays, you know, that they're talking about. What's going on at Purdue? Okay, a deep dive on what's happening with these Purdue prospects. I'm sure that will really do numbers there. So, okay, let's get back on track here. That's going viral, baby. Oscar Delp, tight end out of Georgia, 87th on the consensus board. What do the people need to know about Oscar Delp?
Oscar Delp is, he ended up as my tight end 4. He is a guy that made my top 75, actually even made it like pretty even higher than just the cutoff. Has actual inline blocking ability. He battled some injuries, I think this offseason, where he wasn't able to test and everything. We actually first talked about him at the combine. I really liked him for the Chiefs on day 2. Has some real inline chops.
Oh, yeah.
Has some blocking ability. His production is very traditional for a college tight end. Not a lot. that's the best way I could put it. But you got to see the flashes of his athleticism. Like, you could see real field stretching ability. You could see good hands, strong hands, especially in traffic. He can attack the seam, take the top off. So he ended up as my tight end 4 because I do like his inline ability on top of like of the flashes of him as a receiver and the explosiveness that he can bring as a receiver. He's not, doesn't, as a blocker, he did play in line. He's got the want to. Technique is a little iffy. Wasn't the longest guy. I prefer at least to have 32-inch arms if you're going to be a wide tight end. He's just under that. It's not the end-all be-all. But I do think he maybe put on just a little bit more bulk, and I like him more in line. But I like the toughness, I like the technique, and I like the athleticism. So he's more for projection and flashes, but it's not total theory, I think, with him. But I just like the possibility of him being able to hang in line along with some of the downfield stuff. Like, if you're trying to find, I think Barner was a little bigger, but if you're trying to find a Barner in this draft class, like that, this kind of feels like an AJ Barner-ish type of player. But definitely like him in the day two range. Have him just after. So I have Sadiq, Eli, and then blank tight end 3. I'm going back and forth between Stowers and blank tight end 3. We'll get to him in a sec. And then Delp is my tight end 4 just because of that inline possibilities with him.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's right up your alley. I believe you're the first person on this show that turned us on to the Barner experience.
The Barners.
Yeah, there are dozens of us. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's kind of the guy you're looking for. these types when you're kind of looking for an under the radar tight end. I mean, he might go on day two, so maybe not totally under the radar, but a guy that could just end up growing into being a productive player because he's just on the field a lot. And, you know, he's a valid Y tight end. He's a good blocker. You mentioned the arm length. That's obviously something to watch, but he can just eventually grow into being more of a receiver on kind of design shot plays. We've seen that with AJ Barner at times too. Games where the Seahawks have gotten behind, he ends up getting a lot of targets. So I do like it. The 4.48 at the pro day, according to Hayden Winks here, is definitely really good to note there. Only 9 tight ends on Mock Draftable's website to match that. So he did that with a hairline fracture in his foot, apparently. Yep. That is a really good note. So a lot of potential here for Oscar Delp. If he goes to the right team, maybe you kind of excuse that production.
And other pro day numbers, and of course, this is from Danes the Beast, which is just an incredible resource. I'm in the nitty gritty, and Danes teaching me stuff sometimes. At his pro day, because this has just become a new thing. I swear it wasn't like this when even just 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. His pro day, his arms were longer than it was at the combine, 32 1/4. So there it is.
It's becoming a thing also, for a lot of cat prospects lately.
I thought it used to be usually maybe a quarter inch, maybe an eighth of an inch and all that, but not half inch, not 3/4 inch sometimes. It's kind of ridiculous. And he also had 23 on the bench. He had 38-inch vert and a 10.5 broad. So again, that tracks with what he flashes as an athlete. It's just that some of these college tight ends or college offenses, and especially these college quarterbacks, they just don't know how to use a tight end. They're just like, well, I'm just going to throw a go ball to a receiver. I'm not going to work over the middle on what they call a basic dig over the middle and throw through the muck. So that he's kind of like that was the negative, not really negative of him. It's just more the environment that he had to play in at Georgia.
All right. Next guy up on the list here, we've got Justin Jolie from NC State. From Dane Brugler's The Beast, he compared him to Jonnu Smith. It needs to refine the route running, but that's an interesting player comparison there from Dane. He's 119th on the consensus board. What do you think about Justin Jolie? 6'3", 241 pounds, by the way.
Yeah, I understand the Jonnu Smith comparison is actually pretty apt. That I have him as more of a round 4 guy. Easy mover, gets in and out of the breaks really well, can adjust for the throws. I was not shocked he had gigantic hands, 10.5-inch hands, because that's the highlight of his game is how he snatches the football. Like true, we always say tight ends, you know, you can see they have basketball backgrounds. Like him, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I can see that. His route running, and actually you just said in that blurb with Dane, is really loose right now. He lacks a lot of detail. He kind of oozes in and out of his routes, kind of just, you know, doesn't have that detail yet. So he's more of an athlete playing the position, as opposed to a guy that's a little bit more refined. Like even Delp with less production, I thought was more of a refined route runner than Jolie. It lacks great size. So that's where I can only get so high. If you're going to be a receiving tight end, I love the big hands. I love the ball skills. I want to see a little bit more detail and refinement, and also like could be a little bigger and maybe have a little bit more inline stuff. So I only can get so high with that kind of archetype. And I think Jonnu Smith went in the 4th round. I could be wrong. I might be mixing
around that range. Yeah.
Maybe Gerald Everett was 3rd round. But yeah, this type I grade personally as a 4th rounder. If he sneaks up a little higher.
3rd round in the 2017 draft, by the way, was Jonnu Smith. Okay. I think Gerald Everett was like a second. I think he was a second round. Gerald Everett, second round. Yeah. I remember when they took him, it was supposed to be like, oh, because that was the 2017 Rams, McVay's first year there. That's their Jordan, or that's their Reed, Jordan Reed. Yeah, it's their Jordan Reed, not the draft analyst from ESPN. Jordan Reed, the former tight end, 6'3", 252 pounds. Did not turn into Jordan Reed, by the way.
And Joey, I don't know. It's like he's a little different than those two. Like, his is more ball skills. Those guys had yak. Joey's got a little bit of that, but it's not like, oh man, every play he's just throwing guys up. Like, it's not like Harold Fannin last year, who was like a bull in a china shop every time he got the football. But I do, again, I just keep coming back to the ball skills, because that is notable. Once you see him catch the football, you'll get what I mean. Anyone that wants to watch Justin Jolie right now. But again, only can get so high with this archetype because the lack of inline ability and lack of true freakiness and refinement as a route runner, even if I do like some aspects of his game.
Yeah, in addition to bagging on Dalton Kincaid, I kind of subtly bag on Gerald Everett throughout the course of the whenever I'm talking about tight ends.
I'll join you on that.
I, I may have hinted at this with you, and I definitely, when I had Max on Reception Perception, the show, and we were talking about like just my evolving philosophies on tight ends, I think I mostly got really radicalized watching the Chargers seasons when Austin was on the show for Eckler's Edge. And I always say, like, the tight ends that during that time truly like sabotaged their run game, because Austin was a good back and they had some decent linemen, and like scheme was, you know, it was what it was, but the tight ends truly, yeah, I would say, like, sunk that run game. One of those tight ends was Gerald Everett during that time.
And that was, we've talked about this, because they never got a blocking running back to help out Austin, like a guy that could just be
a grinder back.
And they just kept getting these 230, 240 pound tight ends. And they're like, man, we can't run the ball to the outside. I'm like, I could really help you guys just splurge on a guy that could just block in line. And it's going to help everybody out. It'll help your tackle out. It's going to help your running back out. It's going to help Justin Herbert out. But man, they just kept throwing receiving only tight ends. It was those Chargers. Tom Telesco, man. I had some good rants at the Athletic on Tom Telesco and his route, his roster building for a few years.
Yeah, man. That's a, and then, like, of course, the first year, Jim Harbaugh's there. It's like, we got to get, God, what's his name?
Yeah.
Will Dissly. Will Dissly. We got to get Will Dissly in here. It's like, that's what you needed this whole time. So that is where some of my tight end, like, inline radicalization has come from here the last few years. But last guy we're going to talk about and break down in depth is Sam Roush. He comes from Stanford. Yes. So obviously good history of Stanford tight ends. What do we think about Sam Roush? 6'6", 267. So that is a big human being right there.
Yes, and he's got the Hanson brother glasses. If anyone, you know, anyone wants ever watches Hot Shots, maybe that's just a Minnesota thing. But Roush, or a Dudley brother, if you're a wrestling fan. No. But he tested very well, and he is very big and runs very well and jumps very high. You can project him a little bit as a, not a little bit, you can project him as a Y as well. And again, this gets back to my biggest freakiest athletes. You know, you bet on this, a guy that made my top 100, but not top 75. I know that sounds just like nitpicking, but that's just how I rank him. I like that he can play Y. I see the athleticism doesn't always show up. You know, it's not like, holy crap, this is George Kittle out there. There's some similarities to him and the tight end that the Cardinals took from Illinois in the third round, and now I'm blanking on his name.
Tip Riman.
There's some similarities. Tip Riman. There's some similarities to that where it's like, this guy's a freak, but I don't always see that. And I also, I'm not as high on him as others, even if I like him, and I like him better than Jolie and stuff. The lack of arm length does show up with him. He doesn't have very long arms, even though he's very big, 30 5/8. And I do think that that shows up when he's trying to sustain and blocking. So I don't actually project him as much as dominant of a Y as maybe others do. I actually think some others will project better at the NFL level. Do like his size. Do like he has enough athleticism to be a valid receiver. But I do think he's just more like a solid starter. Can maybe get a little Cade Otton there. Like, there's some Cade Otton to his game, but he's a little bigger. Yeah, but that would maybe be my, like, good comparison for him a little bit, like where Ryman might be kind of the middle tier. Otten's a little different flavor. Roush has a little bit more oomph to him, but I do think there's just that where he's more of a steady presence as a receiver. I'm not going to go like, this guy Olsen's going to enter the NFL. Wait till you see him go. I kind of know what he is. But I do like him. I just see others. I think, I don't know. I don't see what others see sometimes with his blocking. He could outkick his wherever he gets drafted, depending on where he lands up. But it's, again, just have some more nitpicks with him. Can I get to the guy that I really might be my tight end three?
Well, you haven't said it yet. We're gonna take one more. We're gonna take another quick break here, and when we come back on the other side, we will get into this mystery player that Nate has been teasing. I think I might have a guess, but I could totally be wrong. So I'm gonna let him tell me that right after this quick break. All right, we're back. Nate has been, you know, just keeping us on the hook here about who his actual tight end three.
Tight end three, maybe two, depending on how I go. He might end up as my tight end two. I know. And I can explain why I'm having trouble with it. But you want me to get into it?
Well, there's a whole bunch of guys. So this typically what we do, like the diamond and the rough here segment is just, again, throw out the field. Some names here that we've got, Eli Raritan, we've got Marlon Klein, we've got Jack Andrees, Joe Royer, some others as well, too, a little, you know, maybe deeper down the consensus board. Tanner Koziol, who I think EJ Snyder brought up on our pod back at the combine. Michael Trigg, Daquan Wright, who is Daquan Wright, by the way, Ole Miss. He looks much bigger than he actually measured in. Because you've been watching, you talked about Stribling yesterday. I'm like, who is this? Yeah. Is it this big ass tight end they got here? And I was like, oh, he's only 2'6". He's only 250, two something like 2'6", 250. I thought he'd be bigger than that. He looks bigger on film. Anyways, I throw the field out there to you, Nate. A couple other names as well. You can see on the screen. Who is this mystery tight end three you've been talking about?
Yeah, I kind of spoiled it because I was like, oh, there's Eli's in this. It's Eli Raritan from Notre Dame.
I knew
it
was Eli Raritan. Yeah, that was my guess. Okay.
I'm trying to look around and going, why isn't everyone super high on him? It's kind of been freaking me out because he had two ACL injuries, one in high school and then one his freshman year of college. But he hasn't missed any time since that. So, okay. So, yes, that's a medical. He's going to get flagged for that by some teams, and I understand that. He doesn't have overwhelming production, you know, especially until late in his career. Get all that. That's a lot more acceptable, I think, for a tight end, as we talked about with a few other guys. This is not theory. He is an inline blocker already with good technique, good strength, can bend, can drive. And I could say day one, he's going to be at least fine in that area and going to end up being good, which is very rare for a young tight end. On top of it, a very good athlete who... It's test that way, but also when you watch him on film, it just very well for the football, can contort his body, can take the top off the coverage, like so he can attack the seam. I'm just kind of, this is why it's hard for me, is that Stowers, who I like way more than I thought I would, understand that his receiving ability might be that ace in the hole and he ends up being kind of this freak guy. My grading scale, and it's one of those where I'm trying to stick with my methodology, the guys that can block in line get the bump. Like they break tops. Yeah. If I have you graded the same, but you can block in line, the Y gets the bump. It's just how I've been taught. It's what I've stuck with my entire professional life, I should say. But Raritan, man.
I mean, you've pretty much been.
It's my whole life. Let's be honest.
Two, three. Yes. What do you been doing? Yeah, come on.
I've been reading. Yeah, draft profiles since I think sixth grade was the first time I was reading that stuff. But my dad would have me fact check his coach's write ups when I was in middle school because he would just be like, "What are you reading? Okay, what's this bullshit that he's saying?" Because one of his coaches had like this corner that was going to go top 10. I'm trying to remember who it was, and he had like a fourth round grade on him. And he goes, "Does this seem right?" I go, no. I go, "I think that guy's going like really, really high, actually, Dad." I actually got the coach in trouble. But anyways, Eli Raritan, good size. I want to figure out who the DB is. He played at Miami, the DB did. So that's what I remember. But I got to look up what the year was. All right. But Raritan, 6'6", 245, almost 33-inch arms, huge hands, almost 11-inch hands, 10 3/4. He ran a 4.62. 10-3 broad, 20 bench. So he's checking all the athletic boxes. Again, biggest, freakiest athletes. These are guys you bet on. He has actual inline ability. And it's not just one snap. Oh, okay. I can extrapolate those two snaps that you did well at. That's kind of how Delp is a little bit, where it's more about 50-50 how he does. Raritan, 8 out of 10 times, you know, 4 out of 5 times, it's a good block. And he's not just blocking linebackers and safeties. It's edges. And he's doing cutoffs. And he's moving them. And again, with the receiving ability that he flashes, he's a good route runner, and the ball skills that he has, he can contort, he can get upfield with yak. I was kind of, after I kind of graded him, I started looking around and I'm seeing people I respect have him so much lower than I do. And I'm like, what did I miss? Is he an asshole? You know, like, you know, some of that sort. It's no, Burley, great guy, you know, family of coaches and players and stuff. So I'm going to bet on this player profile all day, twice on Sunday. He's, either tight end two, tight end three, but like I have them next to each other. A top 50 player is maybe the best way I can put it. I really like him. So the Eli, Stowers, and Raritan, but Raritan, I'm very curious where he ends up. If the league likes him like I do, again, there's a big chunk of these tight ends. But man, this guy could, if he ends up going lower than I haven't projected, which I could see, I think he outkicks that coverage if he stays healthy, of course. And I think the medicals might be a hang up. I don't know. Guy starts a bunch of games after he hurts himself and doesn't get hurt again. I think he's okay. So yeah, Eli Raritan from Notre Dame. Also, it's kind of a bet on the tight ends from Notre Dame kind of thing. They seem to work out okay. So yeah, a little bit of that too.
Love it. No, I he's 145th on the consensus board. So we will have to see like what the draft capital is. And the reason I knew this was going to be your guy is because I know you. And after I had the discussion with Max about this player, he said the same thing. He's like, yeah, I don't get it. Eli Raritan is like awesome. Like he should be one of the top tight ends in the class. And I went back and watched him, especially some of the blockies. I'm like, oh yeah, this guy can absolutely play in line. And like, again, this is the archetype of player. I think that, you know, you guys as dynasty players and fantasy players should be more so betting on, like, Nate and I have been having this conversation and evolving sense of it ever since he got hired here at Yahoo. So I knew this was going to be your guy because I knew of that. And the way I would say it to people out there is that if you look at his mock draftable profile, like some of the athletic comparables, his number one athletic comparable, like with a gap to the second guy, is Luke Musgrave. Now, Luke Musgrave obviously got Wally pipped by Tucker Kraft because Tucker Kraft can play in line. Like he can really play tight end. He's good for tight end reasons. And if we're talking about a guy here that you're saying this, that he could be good for tight end reasons, but he moves like Luke Musgrave, which is why Luke Musgrave went ahead of Tucker Kraft because of the athletic
stuff.
That's
like top five tight end stuff.
Yeah, we're talking about a pretty freaking cool player. His second comparable, which again, it is like it's 95% Luke Musgrave, 81% the next player, but it's Josh Oliver, who's like one of these hanger-ons with the Shanahan McVay. The McVay trees like travels around all over the place with those guys. So yeah, I think that's kind of the player we're talking about here, which again, Luke Musgrave, but actually valid tight end. That's a pretty cool player you guys should maybe be betting on if he gets some good draft capital.
Oliver is kind of a great mid-tier comparison for Raritan as far as like outcomes. Like that's actually like what I could see him, what kind of the floor of him being, which is a true Y. And that's what Oliver's funny because he wasn't a Y. Like he was like, hey, I'm big and I'm strong. Oh, cool. I can do this now. Now he's getting paid for his blocking ability. Well, and I think that's actually a nice kind of mid-tier comparison for Raritan or middle outcome comparison for Raritan, which again, if he might get overdrafted compared what he is to the public consensus or drafted higher and go to where I kind of have him ranked or Max does. Or if this guy ends up going the fourth round, Raritan, like I cannot wait for dynasty drafts because I know I'm going to get him because I don't have to overspend on him. Like he's a guy I know I'm just saying this on a public forum that I know my fellow dynasty players listen to. But I do think that maybe they'll forget. Yeah, I know. Flood the lane. But man, he's and maybe his medicals are worse than I thought. But from what I've heard, it's kind of like, no, they're ACLs. It's kind of what you expect with an ACL. There's not some degenerative thing. You know, again, I'm not the source guy, but just gathering. Because again, once you're so much higher than what the consensus is, especially once you're in the kind of the weeds of it, and you kind of go, all right, what am I missing? That's kind of how Raritan has been for me. So it's kind of nice to hear Max, who's diving in so deep on this stuff too, kind of feels the same way. Because yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot of guys with this player profile and it's a hard one to find. So yeah, Eli Raritan.
Remember the name. All right, we are going to take our final break of the show here, which means that's going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, if you're watching with us on YouTube, keep it tuned in here. Keep it locked in. We're going to come back on the other side of the break, and we're going to talk about the offensive line class, which you need to know, okay? And you're not drafting them in your dynasty drafts. You need to know the offensive linemen because they're going to make some of these ecosystems better. We're going to get into those guys right after this. All right, we're back. And yes, it's time. Let's talk about the offensive linemen. I know Nate has been itching to talk about these guys, although, like I said, you did a 2-hour pod with your dad, Mike Tice, about this. So maybe you're all offensive line talked out. I'm not. I'm ready to talk about these guys. And definitely, if you guys, I've talked about the show twice here now, definitely go listen to the Football 301 episode with Nate and his dad. One, because it's cool. It's a father-son podcast. Come on. That's maybe you guys are turning into saps like me. I find that heartwarming. Don't know what podcast I would do with my father, but you know, how to screw up like a kitchen repair. I don't know. That's a different pod, but you know, it's heartwarming stuff. You got to love that. But two, the information and the breakdowns are great. And it'll be better than what we're going to do here, but we're going to try to get a quick version of that with some of these offensive linemen. So we've got seven guys here that are kind of the top consensus players. I'm going to just throw the names out here. Francis Mauanoa, Caden Proctor, offensive tackle. By the way, Mauanoa from Miami. Caden Proctor from Alabama. Spencer Fano from Utah. I know you and I have actually talked about him previously. Really interesting player. Monroe Freeling, Georgia. Nate, this is a guy you were kind of early on, definitely the right archetype of left tackle to bet on. We'll talk about him. Offensive guard, like maybe our first true guard here, Vega Ione out of Penn State. Blake Miller, offensive tackle from Clemson. And then Max Iheanacho. Thank you, Dane Brugler, for the pronunciation guide. In the beast is worth it alone for the pronunciation guide on some of these players. Really, so Max Iheanacho from Arizona State. Seven really interesting offensive linemen, all of whom I'm going to guess are going to go first round. I think all seven of these guys make their way into round one. I bet there's probably going to be more of them that go in round one than just these guys, like Caleb Lomu, another offensive tackle from Utah, is another name to mention there. So who do you just you really want to highlight from this list?
Yeah, Monroe Freeling, top 10 player for me on my last big board. A guy... It's really fun when this happens. When I did my midseason big board, I watched a game of him, thought he stunk. I should say stuck. I thought he was, I was like, oh, third rounder, see you next year. You should go back to school. You know, that's kind of just what I painted the picture. Didn't think he was great. Actually, his film made me like Keldrick Falk more, you know, the edge from Auburn. And it was just kind of one of those things. And then at the end of the year, I'm watching the SEC championship game, and I kind of my doing my due diligence, and you know, just everyone knows during the season Fridays, I just watch some college film. I don't post anything, nothing, because I'm just trying to fly through and take a couple notes. And I watch him. I'm like, who's this freak? It's like, no way, that's the same guy. And then I'm watching. I'm like, wow, tremendous improvement over just the course of one season. Has a basketball background, has true left tackle ability, and it's not projection. It's not like, oh, you can maybe do it. Like, if this guy played one more year, he'd be, I think, a lock for next year in a loaded class as a top 10 guy. Now, I think others, you know, not a lot of people watching the line, so they're a little slower with the bumps. And I just think his size, his length, he has a basketball background, but sometimes basketball backgrounds with offensive linemen is kind of a, because they don't play, they play like a basketball player, not a football player, but not for him. He has some physicalness. He's a good run blocker. He just gets you excited about what he could become because he's a true, true left tackle with enough film that's not a total project, but so much more that he can still tap into. I still think he can add another 10, 15 pounds. He's all of 6'7". He's got great length. He's got big hands. Moves and recovers very, very well. So I think if I were to wager right now, I think he does end up going top 10. You know, I do think the offensive line go higher than people are realizing right now. I actually, if I were to put it, I would say 9 go in the first round, not just tackles, some guards too. We'll talk about one, but I do think that Freeling might be one of the first ones off the board or one of the earliest ones off the board because he is what a lot of these other guys don't have. He can be a left tackle and it's not projection. It's not a lot of questions on it. It's more like how high can he get or what his ability can get to. So very exciting player, very fun player. That's very improving already and has a toolkit that's exciting.
No, yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not like you watching the college players during NFL season. You're actually doing some of that stuff, and I don't even watch college football like as a hobby or as an enjoyment thing, because you know, just happily married man trying to stay that way. Not that you aren't, Nate, but you know, come on.
Come on. Hey,
it is what it is.
It's like, I got two kids, and it's like, hey, no, I got to work today. Sorry, you know, I got to watch 4 games of film. Sorry. Yeah, give me 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have that here. So, but my point in saying that is like, I don't know about Monroe Freeling, you know, at all until like we're getting close to combine. I'm starting to get familiar with the prospects and everything, and people I was talking to at the time was like, this guy, he's going to be on the radar after this weekend. like after he's gonna, and I think you even said like, I'm so glad I got that cram yep. session in on this guy towards the end of the season. I remember talking yep. about this with you then. And yeah, he goes out 6'7", 315, 95th percentile, 40-yard dash for an offensive lineman, yep. which, you know, again, how often is he running 40 yards? He's a freak, okay? He's a freak athlete,
yep.
93rd percentile vertical jump, 88 in the 10-yard split. He has the length that you want. You mentioned that. Like, he could get even better from here. So yeah, I think top 10 in this draft, like, that's one thing too. I think this could just be a top 10 that's filled with offensive line. Even in like the consensus mock drafts and stuff, you don't see like the Titans. Why couldn't they take an offensive lineman? You know,
right.
Why couldn't the Commanders never get an offensive line player? I'm saying never, I'm sure it's happened, but you've done 50 mock drafts at this point. Maybe you've made this pair, but like, you see that a lot where it's like, oh, they'll take a defensive player or Jeremiah Love. I'm like, they could take a guard. You know, they need a guard. Yes. Like, I mean, that's there's a lot of those teams in there, even the ones that we do think, like the Browns obviously need a left tackle. They could take Monroe
yep.
Freeling.
Yep.
My point in that is saying that I think we're going to see a lot of offensive linemen in the top 10, which is then just going to boost even other guys up into the first round. Correct. It's going to be a very offensive line heavy class.
Oh, once we get into, and especially not even just top 10, we get into the run that I would say starts with Baltimore. Baltimore could go guard. You know, then you got the Jets could go guard. Then you got the Lions who need a tackle. You got the Vikings. Wouldn't mind. Like, I'd think the Vikings are going defense or anything like that. But the Panthers could go line. You got the Steelers maybe go there. Chargers could go interior. Eagles can go go tackle because they want their Lane Johnson yeah. replacement. They go guard too. The Browns, Bears need a left tackle. Like, you know, it's just team after team. 49ers, Texans. Chiefs, apparently, the Chiefs are low on Simmons. Dolphins could go on the right side. Patriots could go on the right side. Seahawks could go right guard. So it's that I think there's a couple more landing spots early, but then I think once we get into that second half, really it's from picks 14 on, I think they're going to go flying off. I see people thinking a receiver run. I'm like, I don't know. I think it's a tackle run and a guard run before, and then we'll see a couple of receivers kind of scattered in throughout kind of maybe the back half.
Yeah, I just think it's going to end up being like both of those positions. There's going to be different runs on them, probably more the receivers in the back end. Offensive, I guess, shoot, even the Saints at 8, most of their offensive line is settled, but Ruiz is a pretty, they could go there. So there's a lot of just offensive line. They could go there. There's a lot of offensive line possibilities high on the draft. So Monroe Freeling, I'd be a little bit surprised. You think of like an Andrew Thomas type career path, maybe for him, where the first year you're like, yikes.
Then
he's like the best left tackle in the league.
yes.
Yeah. Shout out to Dave Gettleman Georgia on that tackle. One. Pretty good.
Oh,
yeah,
I know.
Oh yeah. Another Georgia. That's right. Another Georgia tackle. Yeah. I forgot.
Another Georgia tackle. I know.
So other guys on the list.
There's
here.
A couple of them though. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. No. Go. Yeah. Just take the wheel. Who else you want to highlight here?
You know, Francis Malinoa from Miami, I like as a right tackle or a guard, and I do have him pretty highly ranked. I think so. Freeling is my offensive lineman one, if you want to put it that way. Okay. And then I have Malinoa as offensive lineman three. I'll get to two in a sec. But Malinoa, why I have maybe a bump lower, I mean, he's still 14th on my big board, still a pretty big rate on him, is that I do think he's earned the right to fail at right tackle, but I do think he's best as a guard. But I do think he can be a dynamite guard. He's a technician. He was a big recruit. He's got good size. He's got kind of he plays with a nice base, wide, efficient mover. He can kind of get up at the end, and my dad and I talk about this a lot, something I've taken from him. I feel like I found it true. Can end up on the ground a lot because he gets out over his skis, and that can kind of indicate maybe a lack of top-end athleticism and all that. So I do think that is why I have a little hindrance. I don't think he'd ever play the left side, but I do think he's a starter because his technique is so good. His eyes are so good. He's a good size, good athlete. So just a lot of good with him, but maybe not. That's why I give other guys a bump. Tying in with my tight end discussion, there's certain tiebreakers I have when I have similar grades. Are you a tackle? Well, you're going to get the bump. Do I think you have to move into the guard? Well, I'm going to have you just a little bit lower. So I do think that's why my only knock on him is that maybe he can't stick out a tackle, but I think you can give him a shot. But he's big, good run blocker, enough of a pass protector and enough of an athlete. You're not too worried in that regard. I mean, Caleb McGarry stuck out at right tackle as a way worse athlete than Malinoa. So, and Malanoa's got much better technique and all that. So if he gets in the right offense, he could be a great right tackle, but I do think he will be a dynamite guard for anybody.
Yeah, I would love to see him in like a run heavy offense. We mentioned Baltimore, like they probably
that's a good
could
fit.
They view him as a guard if he gets to 14? Like, yeah, he's just kicking butt in the run game there. That would be really fun. Yes. Okay, so who's your three?
Yes, it's a guy that I'm going to get his name right by the time the draft happens, but that's Ihanachor as our the third wheel of Football 301. Charles calls him Nacho. He says he's going to learn how to say it once he gets drafted, which is now I call him Nacho. This is one where I have him. I think I literally am the highest guy on him. If you look at everybody's boards, he's 11 overall for me. Talking with my dad made me feel way better about that because, yeah, most people have more than 20s, maybe early 30s. You can never played football in high school. Didn't start playing until he got to JUCO. He was a basketball and a soccer player. Came to America from Nigeria, went junior college, strides out a tackle, pretty good, goes to Arizona State, and you could easily label him as a project. But his film is way more polished and way better and way indicates more that he gets it and actually understands the position rather than just, I'm an athlete and this is what my coach told me to do. And there's a difference to that. I'm just really bullish on him because he's a freak athlete, another guy that tested very well, huge size, all of 6'5", 320 pounds. Like, he's a beefy guy with good length. And he's also good in run game. Like, he can latch on and deliver. He's never on the ground. He finishes his blocks. His hand usage, again, is way better than you would expect for a guy that's just new to football. And then pass protection-wise, if you watch him against Texas Tech, he locks down David Bailey for the entire game. And Romello Height, who's going to be a day two guy as well, locks him down. He doesn't have a loss in that game. I've watched it twice now just to make sure. But he's just an exciting combination of tools and enough real film to get you excited, even if it might, there's going to be blemishes jumping to the next level or bumps. But I'm very excited. He's a right tackle that's athletic enough to kick over to the left side if a team wants to do that. So again, that's why I give him like the tiebreaker over Malanoa.
So I thought about this when you and your dad were talking about him, and I was waiting to talk about this on the show with you. Tell me, I don't know if you listen, I also was not like in-depth scouting players when this guy was drafted, but as people know, you know this, I grew up a Panthers fan, and I'm not a Panthers fan anymore. Haven't been for many, many years. But like 2008, 2007, that was like peak. I was in high school. There was the D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart experience pretty close to then. So remember Jeff Otah? He started playing football his senior year of high school. He was Nigerian. I was like, 6'6", 232. This guy's 6'6", 322. This guy's 6'6", 321. He was the right tackle for the Panthers. His career, he was a good player. Again, to my novice eye at the time, he was a badass right tackle. But he just couldn't stay healthy, and that really injuries really ruined his career. But man, he was the right tackle across from Jordan Gross, and they just kicked butt in the run game back in the day. I was like, that made me kind of think of Jeff Otah. Yeah, some of the background, right? Like latecomer to football. Again, he was I think he started playing high school. I think he started playing football his senior year of high school. Which, my God, imagine just being such a freak show that you could be like, I'm just going to start playing football my senior year of high school, and then get drafted in the first round. And so then And like I said, I loved Jeff Otah as a casual watcher of the Panthers back in high school, because I just thought he was a badass right tackle, kicking butt in the run game.
Yeah.
So then Penn State, the whole deal, I believe, Pitt, in 2006. So yeah, I don't know. That made me think about that player, and I was like, man, if this could be a guy that goes to the NFL and is a big time run blocker like that, and a little useful in pass protection, because there were people who thought like Otah could play left tackle, but he was with Jordan Gross. Like, you never found out.
No, that's a great comparison. There is a lot of similarities. Yeah, he went prep school instead of JUCO, same thing now. But and ended up being, he went pick 19. Yeah, and I think it's kind of, he's another player, we were talking about this with Raritan a little bit, but he's one that, and a little bit with Freeling, where I thought, especially after he performed at the Senior Bowl, I thought Hanchor would like get a bump. Like, and he did, but not to the extent I thought. Like, it's like, especially when you have a performance like the Senior Bowl and then the Combine, people go back and then they're like, actually, he's really good. He just never has gotten over the top there. And I'm kind of just surprised. I'm like, I feel like it's a very easy, I think he ends up going easily top 25. I would even venture maybe even say top 20. Another player that I'm looking around like John Travolta and Pulp Fiction going like, where is everybody? Kind of like, where is everybody on this grade? And it was really reassuring when I did the show with my dad and he's like, I love him. And I'm like, oh, thank God. It's like, I'm not just like bastardizing everything you taught me.
there you go. That's good. Well, the Panthers had to, I think they tried to trade up they had to trade up with the Eagles to take Jeff Ota. So maybe somebody will trade up and really, really make you look smart there. That would be a top 20 pick there for old Max E. Anachor. Max Iheanacho, we're all going to get this right here together. All right, who else do we want to highlight here? Let's get two more guys in.
Spencer Afano is a guy that I've been trying to figure out a sense because he's a great athlete. His film is good. His body type is just so weird. He's very linearly built, like he's very just straight, narrowly built. Doesn't have a lot of length. But he's such a good athlete that you're like, I got to find a spot for him. And he's got enough want to and grit and finish. So he's a guy that I have ranked in my teens. I see people saying that he's 5-position versatility. I think it's more 3-position, maybe 4. I don't think he can play left side. No, actually, he didn't play left side, which is funny. He played left side. He played right tackle in high school. Left tackle as a true freshman. He was a big recruit. Then bumps over to the right side because his teammate, Caleb Lomu, who I preferred just a little bit, just like one spot higher because I think he can stick out a tackle, Lomu. Well, Fano, I appreciate his ability, but the fact that he has to kick inside to guard or center, like the fact that he can probably play center as well. He has the athletic ability. He's already taken snaps and stuff. That's an appeal where he can be a weapon in that regard. I have some questions of how he sets and pass protection and just because of his build. So that's why I have some knocks on him, but really like him as a, could see, I think the league likes him even more than I do. He's been kind of the consensus number one guy for a while, but I just have a couple questions on him staying at tackle, but just a really cool player and really fun, just unique player with a cool athleticism and kind of want to as a player.
It feels like the league probably views the versatility as a plus. Like, well, if he doesn't work out here, we can kick him around. And then like maybe it just depends on how you view that. But yeah, I really like his movement skills. Thinking about him as a guard in like the right scheme that really wants to pull these guys and stuff like that, I think he would be a pretty big asset there.
Cody Mock. That's who they're built exactly the same. Mock was a tackle at North Dakota State, bumped inside. Fano's a better prospect to me, but that's kind of like the projection for me. It's like, okay, you're like a Mock plus. You're 2.0 Mock, Mock 2, Mock 3.
Mock 2. Yeah. And you guys remember that Bucks season with Liam Cohen a couple of years ago where they're running a lot of gap and they're crushing people in the screen game. You know what you need to be doing those two things? You need some guys who can move on the interior. So he definitely, that's a really good comparison. Yeah. Somebody that I think can help in pulling and screens and stuff like that. Yep. Okay. Maybe just give us one more that you really want to hammer home here.
Yeah. Just even staying positive on all these guys. I'll say one guy I'm a little lower on than maybe the consensus is Caden Proctor from Alabama. I do have some issues with guys that big, which is the irony of all that is I talked about this with my dad and I went through the list of offensive linemen. He weighed 352 at the combine and he immediately shot up 7 pounds to his pro day to get to the danger territory of plus 360. So it's like, the big question is, can you keep off the weight? And he immediately puts on almost 10 pounds in a couple of weeks. Okay, I know my answer. That's not to say he's not a total oozer. He's not like a sloth or anything, but there is speed that can get him when he can't get out of his stance. I think other big offensive linemen maybe hurt him, like J.C. Latham came out recently. It's funny though, I brought this up to my dad. I was like, do you have issues with big guys? And he kind of went back and forth on it. And it's two of the guys that were 360 pounds are two guys my dad coached. So I just think that's kind of funny. One of them, great. Brian McKinney, and the other was Corey Stringer. So guys they drafted in the first round. So Proctor, I still like him. I can still see him going high. He's young. He's talented. He tested great. He can jump and all that. He is the guy that when I say kind of falls on the ground a little too much, or when I use that kind of example for some guys, he can have a little too much of that where he just kind of can't finish that block. He kind of trips over himself, gets his head over his skis. Does he have to bump inside to guard? I don't know. I just don't think he has the foot quickness and the speed to hang on the left side. I like J.C. Latham better. And when he was coming out, another Alabama jumbo behemoth tackle. And I thought Latham was way more fluid to hang out at tackle, and he's had some issues. That's where I, and also for a guy that's this big in the run game, just don't, and this is arbitrary, but I just don't feel that dominance and that movement that has to be his calling card. All right. If you're going to be an average pass protector, well, run blocking, you better just be incredible. Just blowing, nuking the defensive line, every double team. Just don't really get those snaps. So that's where I kind of just can only get so high with them, even if I recognize the size and the movement and some movement ability and everything. But yeah, the kind of history of 360 plus pounders is not great. The first round, since 1970. So that's when the merger of the AFL NFL. So you got Aaron Gibson, former Badger, was drafted in the first round, considered a bust. Mike Williams, drafted fourth overall in 2002, not the receiver. The offensive lineman from Texas, considered a bust. Brian McKinney, good starter, maybe not elite, but good starter. Mekhi Becton, kind of how you feel about Mekhi Becton. He cool as a rookie, got hurt, now as a guard, he's kind of up and down as a guard. So it's kind of, that's like a Proctor kind of path. Then you got a whole bunch of other guys. Trent Brown, who's a seventh rounder. Jordan Mailata, who was international, so that's why he went seventh round. Daniel Falele, who's now with the Giants, was the Ravens, but tackle, guard, fourth rounder. DeJuan Jones, who's kind of the tackle right now for the Browns, fourth rounder. So a lot of kind of, not a lot of like, yeah, like yeah. Not a lot to get you excited, right? I know, and it's like, I know every player is different, but the guys that are cool went late. Trent Brown went in the seventh round, and Joey Mailata was an international guy, so obviously that's why he went so late as well. So that's why he's kind of got some caveat emptor to me, some buyer beware.
Heavily rumored to be like the Lions pick at 17, I believe.
I know, yes, 17.
So we'll see if that happens.
I can see the Browns liking him too, because Browns are they have a fetish for age, and I could just see it. Yeah, he's young, and I could see in like just metric stuff, like they really buy into that stuff. I could see them like falling for him if he's there in the 20s.
Look, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. If you mentioned like the weight, red flags and stuff like that, I probably want that guy with the Lions, Dan Campbell, maybe more than, you know, the Browns and like what might be a new coaching staff in 2 years or something like that. So
Deshaun Watson running around or Shedeur Sanders running around. Oh, like, God, I know. Not a great. Not fun there.
Well, really interesting offensive line class. We'll have to see how this develops, but definitely some kind of background information on these guys. So if they land with your team or they land with an ecosystem where they can really benefit, that was a really good discussion. Nate, appreciate the hell out of you, buddy. I don't think we have any more 2-hour podcasts scheduled before the draft, but you never know. We'll see what happens. We were supposed to go an hour on this one, and that I knew pretty quickly that wasn't going to happen. So what can you do? What do you got working on, people? What do you got working on that the people can check out in addition to our live draft shows next Thursday? Yes. Thursday and Friday, we will be live during the first 2 days of the NFL draft. It's going to be you, me, Charles McDonald, Andrew Siciliano, I believe. It's going to be
Andrew,
in the mix
night
there.
One, and I think
then
Fitz
night two. Yes, so plenty of folks. We'll get our reporters in there as well. It's going to be great. Those shows are going to be awesome. If you're watching us now, listening to us now, you're not going to watch us on Thursday and Friday night. I don't love that. Don't love that. Make sure you do that. What else are you working on that the people can check out?
I had my Fernando Mendoza deep profile last week. And then this week, my top 75, my big board will be out. It's filed. So hopefully it's out tomorrow. So that'd be after the game for record this. Or I'm hoping anyways, we'll see. But no, that's what's coming out. Yeah. And then we got our draft show next week, which will be a ton of fun. I love draft night. So that's gonna be a great time.
It's going to be great. Can't wait. I can wait for the draft because I still got some more work to do before it's here, but I can't wait to finally figure out where these guys are.
You were my last hump. doing the receiver pod was my last like grind. Like the big board was easier than my receiver grind. Cause it was like, cause I was like, I don't know how deep we're going to get. I better watch 20 something guys just to make sure.
I think we talked about 20 essentially on the show. So there you go. We nailed it. And I'm going to have 30 up on the site by the time draft day comes around. So yeah, we'll see if any of these guys end up mattering. You never know. All right, that is going to do it for today's show. Appreciate Nate Tice for joining us. On Monday, we are going to be back as Daniel Jeremiah. Yes, the big fish himself of the NFL draft world. He's going to join us for our final edition of Mock Draft Monday of the season. That's going to hit your feed first thing Monday morning. So until then, make sure you check us out. Until then, we are out.